This episode of Cox Talking Gamecocks is brought to you by the Mason Jar, New York City. The Mason Jar is the official Gamecock bar for the New York City area. Fans and alumni of USC can come by the jar for some great barbecue, cold drinks, and of course, to watch the Gamecocks in any sport, all while surrounded by South Carolina memorabilia. If you want to get a slice of game day in Columbia all while in the Big Apple, head to the Mason Jar on East 30th Street. All right, here we go. Welcome to episode 97 of Cox Talking Gamecocks, brought to you by the Mason Jar, New York City. I am your host, Tim Cox, and normally I'm saying I keep these things between 1801 and 2001, but this is a very, very special episode, and that will not be the case, as I was very fortunate enough to sit down and have the first interview for the podcast with a USC athlete. I teased this out in an earlier episode, but I was fortunate to connect with the all-time points leader for the Carolina Gamecocks football program. You know him as Parker White. I know him as Big Game Parker, but it was a blast. You know, just to preface this a little bit, he is a super down-to-earth guy, totally easy to talk with, really, really good conversation. Talked about a wide range of topics. I wanted to approach it as a fan, just like I do with this whole podcast. I didn't want to get into the nitty-gritty of things like that. Wanted to answer or get answers to a few questions I've had for years now, as what is life like as a student athlete? How do you balance the student side of things? What does your week look like? A whole wide range of topics, and then also talk about what Parker is up to now, and how the Gamecock community can potentially help with his current projects here. It was a fun time. I was nervous as all hell, but at the end of it, I felt like, you know, Greg Gumbel, Bob Costas, and Barbara Streisand all wrapped in one, just doing interviews and feeling like an actual journalist, I guess. But go easy on me. It was my first interview. Also, bit of a heads up, the interview was conducted over Zoom, and Parker was on his phone even, so you hear it go in and out just once or twice, but at one point his phone completely overheated and the call dropped. So you'll hear that happen, and then you'll hear me pick things back up again, but it is smooth sailing for the vast majority of it. I guess it's kind of like kicking. You know, it wasn't 100%, but it was darn near really good, just like Parker's career. You know, darn near good, darn near 100%, but not quite. But all right, without further ado, I hope y'all enjoy this. I introduce Parker White. Okay, I want to welcome on a very special guest, the first USC athlete to join the show. He is the all-time points leader for South Carolina football, Parker White, a.k.a. Big Game Parker. Welcome to the show, man. How's it going?
Everything's going good, man. I'm just hanging out in Charleston right now, continuing to work towards that NFL dream that so many chase, and it's tough, you know, getting your foot in the door, but I'm working to try to do that right now, and then do a couple other little, like, side things, like a trucking company we may talk about later that I help out with, and I train kickers in the Lowcountry area, so I like to stay busy and stay afloat right now.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome, man. Obviously, I think I speak for all Gamecock fans. We would love to see you on the field on Sundays in some capacity, so we're all rooting for you. I know we just talked about this, but you are my first interview, and you know, the old saying, you always remember your first. So you may go on to do some great things, may end up in the Hall of Fame, but you'll always remember that you were the first interview on Cox Talking Gamecocks, and I will always remember you for that. But I want to open up with a very hard hitting question. We're just going to go right into things here. What is your favorite bar in Five Points?
oh man, I wasn't prepared for this. so I would say, so So does it have to be limited to one that's open right now or just since I've been at Carolina? Like, what did I enjoy most when I was there or right now?
Yeah, let's go when you were there, because I'm an old head. A lot of my favorite bars are closed, so whichever one you like.
Yeah, I'm the same way. So in terms of the old bars, I have a tough time not putting Horseshoe number one.
Oh.
That was always a spot for me because it was three bars in one. So you had the front little area. Then you kind of had that, you know, diagonal hallway to the back. Then you had an outside bar, too, with all three, like, different music and different scenes going on. So it was kind of like the three in one. And that was kind of like the athlete bar a little bit. You know, and then it kind of turned into saloon some. But, at the beginning, I loved going to Horseshoe. They had the $5 fish bowls and stuff. And that was definitely a deal.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I have a little bit of PTSD from fish bowls. I can barely look at like one in a pet store now and like not gag a little bit. But let's be honest, I doubt you were buying many drinks at your time in Carolina, right?
Oh yeah, not a ton. but you'd be surprised. I always like to keep a low profile, and I obviously don't like using, you know, like the football status to like, you know, gain like too many privileges. You know, it's kind of nice kind of doing the normal thing or whatever. So
I hear you. Yeah. That sounds good. But wanted to back things up now that we got that out of the way here. So you're originally from the Mount Pleasant area, went to Wando High, if I'm correct, 2-time special player of the year, and was just curious, what brought you to USC? Was it a goal of yours to always go there? Walk me through that.
Yeah. So what got me to USC was just the good sport management program that we have. It's, I think, number one in the country. So that's, you know, a credit to that whole school and with retail management. I think it's I forget the abbreviation. It's like HTSM or what is it?
HRSM. I'm also a fellow grad from the college.
Yeah.
So
HRSM. That's it. So yeah, that whole program is really good. So before I knew I was going to play football at Carolina, I just wanted to like work in sports. Like, you know, I wanted to, like, let's say I wanted to work in marketing for like Atlanta United. Cause like, you know, I'm a big soccer fan, or, you know, I obviously like football too. So, you know, maybe wanted to one day be like a GM of like an NFL team or something like that. So that's why I went to Carolina, was because of the good sport management program. And then one thing led to another with me, you know, getting a tryout to kick at Carolina. And then that's how I started playing. But the number one priority was to go there for that major.
I love it. Just a man of integrity, a man of academics, got to respect it. And that was actually my next question, because when you got to campus, you did not play football your freshman year, right?
No, not my freshman year, but January, second semester is when I joined the team for spring practice. But yeah, that first fall from August to December, I was not on the team.
So did you go to the games in the student section like a regular Joe?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, just like anybody else, right?
Love it. So you kind of got both sides of it. So you got to wave the towel and then see the towels being waved. And what was it that drove you to try and walk onto the football team? And then could you walk me through what that process looked like?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole thing about wanting to play sports, like when you kind of set, you know, money or anything aside, is just wanting to be a part of something bigger, you know, and feel like you're contributing to something. And, I saw how cool it was for those players, you know, to get to be out on the field and, you know, be a part of winning games and stuff like that year. I think we beat Tennessee and like had a couple of, you know, big wins and stuff. And I was like, man, that'd be so cool to, you know, to give your all to something like, you know, SEC football, and then to see it kind of materialize in front of you and in terms of like, you know, on the scoreboard and all that. So I don't know. I just kind of set a goal for myself that I wanted to, you know, kick for Carolina. So I gave everything I could every week to getting stronger and faster and, you know, and just developing my skills, you know, kicking wise and stuff, until, you know, I got to a point where I was, you know, more comfortable with it and got better and better. And then kind of just one thing leads to another.
That's awesome. And then could you give a little bit of insight into like what your tryout looked like? Like, how did that day, or was it a couple days? How did that go?
Yeah. So, my tryout was, I think it was like the first week I moved in at Carolina. It was like August, 2016. I had just moved in as like, you know, had a pep in my step as a freshman on campus, was excited. You know, Wando's like a 4,000 kid high school. So I was used to the big school thing. So I was excited to see how, you know, Carolina was going to play out. And so I had talked all summer with like the special teams coach, like not a lot, but just, you know, sent them film and made the highlights and stuff from high school. And, And he was like, yeah, you know, we'll get you, I'll give you a look and, you know, we can do something, but nothing set in stone. This was just a text message, you know? And so, I move into Carolina, and so after I move in, I text him like, hey coach, I moved in. This is Coach Hutzler. He's the special teams coach at Alabama right now, but he was our special teams coach for like 3 or 4 years. But anyway, so I'm texting him and I'm like, hey, I moved in. Like, when can we do the tryout? He doesn't respond to me for like 3 or 4 days. I'm like, well, I guess I got to hang up the cleats. I guess that was kind of all for nothing. And so I was, you know, going to keep working, but I was like, you know, maybe I can, do I transfer? Do I, like, I don't know. And eventually, you know, 4 or 5 days later, he texted me back and was like, yeah, meet me in the indoor tomorrow at noon. Like, you know, not much heads up. Like, this was the night before. I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, I'll be there. So I show up and he was asking me like, if I can punt too. And I was like, yeah, I can punt. And so he let me warm up however I need to warm up. And then he charted me on like 12 field goals, I think. I think I made 10 or 11 out of 12. And then he had me do like 6 kickoffs and he had me do about 20 punts. So it was like a full day's work. It was a whole thing. And I remember I hit field goals really well and I punted well. My kickoffs weren't as good, which was odd because then, you know, I ended up, doing mostly kickoffs my freshman year, at least at the beginning. Like, so it kind of just was kind of like a one day thing, you know, or whatever. But yeah, so it was a good little tryout. And he was like, all right, we still have Elliott Fry. So we're not looking to add somebody on the roster now, but in January, once we lose seniors to graduation, then you can join the team. So I knew I was going to be on the team, but I wasn't actually on it.
Oh, okay. So that's really interesting. So you kind of had it in your back pocket, so to speak, where you were like, right, this went really well. I got this coming, and you had that goal you could work to. But that's really interesting. I did not know it went down like that. And then you already brought it up a little bit, but you and your group of specialists were in a very unique position where I can only equate it to maybe trying to replace a star quarterback with trying to replace Elliott Fry, everything he did. So those were massive shoes to fill. What was it like trying to come in and replace him after all that he did?
Yeah. So, like with anybody, so like with, you know, with college, you only get a few years and then you're gone. So that's always a big challenge, you know, with college football is replacing guys for graduation. The NFL, you don't have to worry about that as much because, you know, the real good guys that you're worried about replacing aren't going to retire for a long time. So you don't have to worry too much about it. So yeah, that is like a big obstacle definitely in college. And you know, that first year was tough because I was kicking off really well, but my field goals weren't where they needed to be, especially from, you know, longer range. But inside of 40, I really didn't miss like a whole lot that first year, but it was the long ones that, you know, that I was missing and stuff. And so, I don't know. I grew to be friends with Elliott, through, you know, him still being in Columbia that year after he was done, he was still finishing his degree and stuff. So, you know, he'd be on the sidelines and we met and, you know, we talk a lot and stuff. So, you know, he was very supportive and stuff and told me about, you know, bad games that he had and ways that, you know, he was able to just kind of overcome that and always worrying about the next kick and not stressing about a previous kick and stuff. So, you just kind of have to go one day at a time when it comes to kind of, you know, filling somebody's shoes like that. So, you know, just go one kick, one game at a time. And then, once it's all done, you can maybe take a peek in the rearview mirror, but it's kind of all about looking, you know, forward first.
Yeah, very cool. And you already answered a question I had. I was curious if you and Elliott spoke at all, especially in that first year, but it was really cool to see that he was even on the sidelines at some point, you're saying. Right. So that's got to be nice to have someone who's already been there sort of guiding you in that sense. Right. And then, you know, in that freshman year, I mean, obviously you grew into the role incredibly well. I mean, we all know how everything ended up, but I have to bring up the start of your kicking career. And we're going to start with the Louisiana Tech game. And you didn't start that game though, right?
Yeah, I did. Well, no, I'm sorry. I did start that game. It was the Kentucky game before that I didn't start, the week before, okay, when I missed 2 from 50+, the other guy missed. But the Louisiana Tech game, I was going to start like the whole time. We just didn't score a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, man, I've held this in for like a long time, so it's nice to get it off my chest. But those early kicks that you missed, I made me storm out of the bar. And I think the friends I was with are still horrified by that. So I'm glad we can meet now and, you know, kind of get that over with. But how are you able to shake off early misses like that and get your mind right to go back out there and ultimately hit that game winner, you know, with, what was it, 5 seconds left in front of the home fans? How do you get that mentality?
So, I mean, it's just kind of about having, like, confidence in yourself, you know? Like, even you just don't really let, like, one miss kind of derail you, and you just do what you've been trained to do. And it's like Coach DeMarco, you know, our old fullback, Pat DeMarco, he's on staff now, and he's always talked about this last year about his thing that he always kind of leaned on was, like, a saying, super simple, but it's just trust your training. So he's like, whenever you're in the midst of chaos, just trust your training. Like, whatever you've done to that you've repped out, you know, at that point I had hit in my career. So trusting what you've built from that has more weight than one kick in front of people, you know? So it's like, that's not really like a good sum, like a good average of what you can do. Like that's one kick, you know, but you really got to look at a larger body of work to really see, you know, so that training is that larger body of work. So you just rely on that and, you know, good times you've had in the past. And then that you know, that kind of gets you through it. But I mean, yeah, I remain pretty, you know, steady even through those tough times to start. But, you know, they ended up, you know, setting me up for a pretty makeable kick. I think it was only like 33, something that, you know, I can pretty much make in my sleep. So that's, you know, not too bad.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's honestly like you got more guts than I have. If I send an email to the wrong person at work, I'm like in my head for like the rest of the day. So for you to trot back out there in front of a full stadium and hit that game winner was really remarkable. And is there someone, I know you kind of said Elliott Fry was on the sideline at times, but was there someone who you could turn to regularly, whether it's, you know, just your freshman year or throughout your whole time that you can like, hey man, like let's get back in the zone here. Like someone you could vent to a little bit. Was there a person or a coach like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, there was actually like a lot of people in my corner, probably honestly too many to name, but off the top of my head, if we weren't like in a game, like during the week and stuff like that, like obviously my parents, like my mom has always, you know, been there for me and she's great and has been super supportive. The only game, I think they only missed two games in my whole career out of 61. They missed the Missouri game in 2017, which was like my second game ever, because it's pretty hard to get out to Columbia, Missouri, especially when I was only doing kickoffs. And then they missed the Ole Miss game in 2018, I think. And that was it. But other than that, you know, she's always been there. So that was good. And then like during the game, my roommate, Bailey Hart, he played at Wanda with me. He was a receiver on the team. Quarterback, converted receiver. So Bailey was, you know, is one of my best friends and was always super supportive of me. And then, you know, the other specialists and stuff like Joseph, Charles, long snapper, and you know they would always kind of pick me up. And then kind of from like a spiritual standpoint, Reverend Jackson was our team pastor. He'd be on the sidelines and we said a couple prayers together and stuff before and during games and stuff, especially when things were going well. And that was always like a good pick me up and stuff. And so I mean, yeah, so all those people kind of, you know, I think worked together to help me a lot.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, no kidding, you had like a whole team behind you. And it's cool because, you know, you really did grow exponentially. 2017, you had 56% of your kicks. 2018, you jumped up to 81. 2019, just about 82%. In 2021, last year, absolutely money, 94%. And in 2020, there was a global pandemic, so we're just not going to talk about the little dip there. But what do you attribute that growth to, especially, I think, incredibly impressive from 2017, 2018?
I mean, just working at my craft, you know, and just starting to, you know, really, really take kicking seriously and you know, kind of, how do I say this? Like, I realized that could be, you know, how I make a living. Like, you know, legs are like my moneymaker. So I really took football seriously from like a recovery and a film standpoint where, you know, in the old days, if I missed a kick, it's like, you know, next, but like, I want to know, you know, what, like, why, you know, let's go back and watch the film. Why was this kick good? And so I can learn from it and, you know, get in a cold tub every day and, you know, treat, you know, your body's your temple, you know, so treating it, you know, the right way and stuff. And so all that kind of helped. And then, you know, just like lessons with coaches and stuff and just learning kind of new techniques and sort of like, you know, aiming points and stuff and, you know, aim small, miss small, all these like little, very minute kicking things, I think, and sort of refining my swing. You know, it's a lot like golf. So having like a good swing kind of is everything. So just getting better from that sort of fundamental standpoint definitely helped a lot too.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, and the proof is in the pudding. I mean, you know, you really grew into a really amazing asset for the team and us fans. You know, I feel like I speak for all of us where when you trotted out there, I felt nothing but confidence. So it's really, really cool from a fan standpoint. And before we change gears here, Wanted to talk a little bit about the student side of being a student athlete. Obviously, we all think about you all, you know, on the field and everything like that, but you had to get schoolwork done, I'm assuming. You know, talk about HRSM. Like, did you have to do like regular group projects like the rest of us, or were you able to get out of them a little easier?
No, I had to do school stuff, definitely. It just depended. Like, there were certain times where, like, especially in my master's, so in undergrad, I did have to do a lot more, like, independent stuff and, like, studying and stuff. And my football team, I think, had two or three different advisors. Mine was a lady by the name of Katie Christensen, who's working for Florida now. She was always super helpful with, like, getting me tutors and stuff. And, you know, you'd meet with her, you know, once a week or once a month or whatever it was. And you'd tell her all the dates that you have stuff. She'd look at the syllabus ahead of time. So, she helped us calendar everything of when we have stuff due. So, I definitely helped a lot, because in the midst of football and travel, it's easy to forget like a homework assignment, you know, but those things can start to add up and, like, you know, you get bad grades. But I'm also like, I'd like to think I'm a pretty good student anyway. So I didn't like really, really need it, but it definitely helped to, I think I made better grades in my years after being, so when I wasn't on the football team that first fall, my grades, I think I had like a 3.0 or something, like it wasn't great. But then after that, I had like at least like a 3.5 in every single semester, like on the football team. Cause I think, you know, having like just being on a team and knowing that, like, man, my grade is going to impact, you know, the team's performance as a whole. Like, and if I don't do like well on something, I won't be eligible to play. And then, like, you know, all this stuff. And so you feel like that there's more people kind of counting on you to do well. So I think that helped. So all that. But then once I got to my master's, once I did my MBA, there was a lot more group stuff. And I got out of some of that, just because, like, it was a lot of work to do. And, like, they would, you know, the only time, like, we could find a group, like, a meeting would be, like, a, you know, a Friday, like, at 6 o'clock. And I'm, like, in season. I'm, like, well, we're at the hotel eating dinner. Like, I can't really do that. Or, like, they'd want to meet on Saturdays. And I'm, like,
no.
Guys, like, because a lot of these people in my MBA were, like, working. So they'd have jobs. So, like, they could only meet at certain times. And, like, it didn't work a lot of times with football. And so, I mean, that was definitely, like, a big obstacle. But, you know, where I was able to, you know, overcome it.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's always funny to hear sort of how y'all balanced it. But I guess in the name of projects, I want to know what your current projects in life are. I know you mentioned you started a business. So first off, congrats, like big kudos to you. What's it all about? Tell me about it. What do you do? Tell me all about it.
Yeah. So I'll try to keep it, you know, kind of as simple as I can. So basically, I talked about him earlier, Ben, he's our old long snapper. He's, you know, helped me out. Yeah. A few minutes ago, I talked about him. Anyway, he is like one of my, you know, best friends. And when we were, it was about after, like, right around the Duke's Mayo Bowl time. So he was a strength coach on the team for like the whole 2021 season. And so he wasn't at the bowl game. So he was back home in Atlanta with his family. He's at dinner and overhears a table next to him talking about with the shortage of right now of like of shipping stuff, like how good, like how much money you'd be making, how good you'd be doing if you had a couple like 18 wheelers and, you know, with trailers, like shipping stuff. Someone was like, I bet you can make a lot of money. Just kind of like a random comment. And Ben was like, you know what? That's actually a good idea. Let me look into that. So he did a lot of research and stuff and sort of figured out that, that it can be, you know, pretty lucrative thing. So he was like, Parker, I was like at Disney World at the time with my girlfriend after the Duke's Mayo Bowl. So, and that's another side story. I wanted to grab the mic after that game and say, like, I'm going to Disney World, like, celebrating the game. Because I actually was, like, the next
would have been
day.
Electric.
Yeah, so that was a missed opportunity I still think about that I should have said. But anyway.
All right, so I think we lost you there, Parker. But you were somewhere in the middle of, you were trying to go to Disney World, or you were at Disney World, and then you got a business proposition. So, floor is yours.
Right. Yep, so Ben came to me with the idea of doing doing a trucking company and asked if, you know, I could help him out. And I was like, you know what, that sounds pretty good. He showed me some spreadsheets and stuff and sent me some articles. I was like, this doesn't sound too bad. Like, this sounds like you can really make some money. So I need a, you know, a kicking fallback or whatever. So I was like, you know what, like, let's do it. So we buy the LLC in like January, and, takes a lot to start a company. So it took forever, but about June or late June, early July, something like that. We started actually driving. So we hired a driver, bought our own truck. We just basically do the logistics and stuff. And Ben drives sometimes because he also got his CDL. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. And in quarter three, we grossed like 75 grand.
That's awesome.
So it's pretty good for one truck. So the business is going pretty well. So yeah, it's been smooth sailing with that.
That's awesome. And then I'm sorry, what's the name of the company? And then also how can Gamecock community help you?
Yeah, so it's called, the name of our company is United Spur Carriers. So we have an Instagram page. And so a lot of it isn't like, so we aren't necessarily needing like, we're like B2B, you know, like mm-hmm. we're dealing with, you know, brokers and stuff. Like we're not exactly like needing people to like, you know, buy something from us. But you never know who can hear about the company and like get us a good contract or whatever. So if anyone out there, you know, has any sort of connections to like the freight industry, where you can always, you know, use help, or if anyone, you know, owns or works in like a distribution center and, you know, needs trucking, you know, we're all ears. And we're looking for something right now, actually, from Dillon, South Carolina. We're looking for where we're thinking about hiring a driver that lives there. So if any sort of, you know, buddy that, or anybody that lives near like Lado or Dillon, South Carolina, we are looking for something out of there. So, you know, we're always all ears. You can contact us on our Instagram page, like at United Spur Carriers. And we're also selling hats for one for 25 or two for 40. And so you can Venmo me, and that's also on our Instagram and stuff. And we can try to send them or meet up in Charleston or Columbia and get you your hat. Just any sort of support and stuff. And we're looking to continue to grow and stuff. So it's been going well.
That's awesome, man. Congrats. I'll be manifesting some growth for you. Someone with the right ears is going to hear this interview. We'll manifest that. But congrats again, man. That's really impressive. So wanted to turn back to your playing days for a little bit before I let you go here. But wanted to talk about the current program under Coach Beamer. Was curious, like, what was the vibe like maybe in the couple days leading up to his hire, but more so in the immediate days and weeks after his hire? What was the vibe like?
Yeah, so to answer the first part, kind of leading up to it is, so when the season was going south in 2020, we get a text, mandatory meeting, 6 p.m. in the indoor. I was like, oh God, I was like, I know what this is about. Muschamp was like, yeah, I've been relieved of my duties as head coach, like blah, blah, blah. Mike Bobo is going to be the, you know, interim head coach. And that's always tough because everyone that was on that team committed to play for Coach Muschamp, whether, you know, a lot of Carolina fans don't like him. I liked him a lot because he always gave me, he did right by me. He gave me every opportunity to come in and compete, and he, you know, he believed in me and gave me the resources that I need to be successful. And I'll be forever grateful to him for that. Gave me my, you know, my chance. So I will never say anything bad about Will Muschamp. So that was, you know, tough kind of moving on from that. But yeah, Coach Beamer, a couple weeks later or after season ends in December, we again have another mandatory meeting. You know, everyone had kind of heard through the grapevine. It was, you know, Coach Beamer was going to be our head coach. Didn't really know a lot about him. Obviously, had heard of his dad before. So figured that, you know, he would, you know, kind of follow in his footsteps and be another kind of, you know, great coach. And so we start off, and well, the one thing Beamer says, and we always put it, Justin King always puts it in those hype videos, but like Coach Beamer said, what was it? I'm trying to remember the exact quote. He said something along the lines of, like, I know you guys don't trust me now, but I'm going to earn your trust, like, over time. And I think he definitely did. I think he's a man of his word and, you know, is going about building the program in the right way, starting with, you know, addressing, like, the culture issues and stuff that we may have had. And I think that we are, you know, continuing to grow the right way. And he's, you know, again, like, kind of like Muschamp, I'll never have anything to say bad about Beamer because he always, you know, went to bat for me and stuff in press conferences and stuff last year. Mm-hmm. You know, he was about ready to fight somebody in that Lou Groza committee when I was sitting there, like, you know, whatever it was, 13 for 14. And I wasn't on, like, there were like 20 semifinalists and like, but I guess like 90 something percent's not good enough. So, he was always like, you know, going to bat for me and always had my back. So, I'll always have his, so that's kind of how it works or how I roll. So
for sure.
I think he's going to do a great job and it has done a great job so far.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, you really, like, it was highway robbery not being on that list. I think we were all with Coach Beamer there. What were some of the differences in approach that Beamer brought compared to Will Muschamp? I'm not saying that one is better than the other here, but just, is there anything that you could speak to of just something that was a little bit noticeable in approach?
Yeah, so I would say like kind of the like the style and stuff, how they dress the players, like is very different. I think Coach Muschamp is more like tough love and stuff. Like if you like, he's more how do I say this? Like he's harder on his players, I think, than Beamer was. Like, so that was kind of like what motivated you to do well, is because I'm totally blanking on, like, it's not a, like positive reinforcement. It's like the opposite of that. Or would it be negative reinforcement, I guess? Or
I think that's a thing. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's like, basically you sort of, it was kind of like, it just depends. Some players like to others, right? So you weren't necessarily operating like out of fear, but it was like, you didn't want to get yelled at. So that was like what always pushed you to do the right thing, is because I was like, dude, I'm not getting on Muschamp's bad side and getting screamed at. So like, I'm gonna just do this the right way. It was like how I kind of like operated and stuff. And then with Beamer, it's like more like, man, if I do this the right way, then he's gonna show me lots of praise. So it's like they both work and they both can be motivational, but I think it was two very different styles, and both of them that I think, I mean, I think I'm intrinsically motivated. So I don't necessarily need a coach, like, you know, kind of, you know, telling me what to do all the time from like a motivation standpoint, but I can definitely see as a fly on the wall that some guys on the team like need that. And everyone kind of has their own style and stuff. So, you know, it just depends kind of like, you know, how your characteristics and your personality styles. But yeah, I mean, they both have their benefits and their downfalls a little bit, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. And then with Coach Beamer's background, I guess family background, you could even say, in special teams, did you notice more of an emphasis on special teams with not just him, but also Coach Lembo?
Yeah. Particularly with Coach Lembo is when I made the big adjustment. So I think Muschamp was a special teams guy, and I think Beamer is too. So I think they, like, in terms of how much we practiced it, like if a practice is 2 hours long, like 30 minutes of that goes to special teams or whatever. I think that was honestly pretty consistent for my 5 years. Like, I think we're spending pretty equal amount of time on special teams, but I do think the players respond really well to Lembo. And I think a lot of Limbo's like X's and O's knowledge and stuff is really good, because I said this like in a different interview. I can't remember who I was. Oh, I was talking to Mike Uvo last week.
Mm.
And I was talking about how Coach Lembo is like a World War II general in terms of like, just the, like the strategies of battle and like knowing to like where to attack them, where they're weakest. It's kind of like, you know, like how Bill Belichick and stuff, like they always seems Patriots seem they never have an identity, but if the opponent is bad at stopping the run, guess what they're going to do all day long? Run the football. So like if we identify that another team's punt unit is bad, you know what we're going to do? Come after them all day long with our punt pressure team. Or if they kick off to the same place every time, then, you know, we're going to have a certain counter return. Like, you know, he's very good with that. And I think the players, you know how much time and stuff he puts into those meetings, into his own film prep and stuff. So I think that's kind of helped, you know, motivate the guys to, you know, to play well on teams. And it shows, because, you know, like without some of those punt blocks, like maybe we don't beat Georgia State, you know, or maybe that's a monster game. So like I think Coach Lembo has definitely made a big difference in that regard.
Yeah, for sure. No, he's a cool guy. I mean, just watching him from press conferences, he's almost like that like funny uncle that you have that you look forward to seeing on holidays. Like he's just bringing up like Godfather quotes and General Patton and all this jazz. But so this question is going to be for both, in regards to both Lembo and Beamer. Like, they both seem like very positive, upbeat guys. And we all know that football is a pretty intense game. Like, can they like crack the whip? Like, have you seen them maybe turn off on their intensity? Like what is that like?
Yeah, definitely. I won't say particularly, because they've both done it, honestly, the more I think about it, pretty equal amount. I'm just around Lembo way more often because I was in his position room. But yeah, Lembo, they definitely can. Like that's really almost like with any coach, like in college, because NFL, you know, if they don't, instead of yelling at you, they'll just fire you. It's kind of how that works. So in college, they're kind of stuck with you, so they got to yell. So I've definitely seen it, like where somebody, you know, messes something up and he's yelling at he's sprinting across the practice field, slamming his hat on the ground. This is Lembo I'm talking about.
Okay.
Like, you know, getting mad at somebody for blocking the wrong guy on kickoff, or him in our position room, like losing his, you know what, about, you know,
you can curse on this podcast. It's all good.
But losing his shit about,
yeah, there you go.
about a bad snap or a bad kick or whatever it is. So he definitely can lose his cool a little bit, but it's all like, I've never had a problem with coach yelling at me like too much, like in terms of me getting salty, like about it, because I know it's coming from a place of them trying to win and they're trying to make me more successful. So I know it's never like a personal thing. Coach Muschamp always said that. He always said it's never personal. And so that's, I always take that. It's like, sometimes you gotta, you know, be a man and realize that you messed up and accept coaching. And so I think I definitely have learned that a lot. And like with Beamer, he definitely, his number one thing, Coach Beamer's number one pet peeve that he cannot stand is when he's talking to the team after practice and you don't have your eyes on him. If like, if you're looking down or like looking up, he's made multiple people like start running laps and like made an example out of them. Like that's his number one thing is you better have your eyes on him when he's talking. Like that's his, he'll go crazy about that. So I've seen him do that multiple times.
Wow. Now, do you think that's just like a unity thing or that's like, you got to pay attention to what I'm saying, 'cause like, this is important here. Like, where do you think that's coming from?
Yeah. The latter. So yeah, I think it's, you know, he's the head coach and he has important things to say, then we need to listen. So it's, you know, it's a little, it's disrespectful when you're not looking at someone when they're talking. That's just kind of how you're raised, you know? So, it's always bad, you know, like whenever he catches somebody, you know, looking or talking to somebody while he's talking or doing whatever, like he always just keep your eyes on me. And then if it kind of get a warning, and then if it happens again, you know, he'll lose his cool and tell somebody to just go run somewhere.
Wow.
And he won't even say what, he'll just be like, I don't want to call any guys out that didn't do it. I'm not going to say any names. He'll just be like, you know what? Just go run somewhere. He won't even tell him. He'll just like, go run right now.
And somewhere.
So they'll just get up and just start running.
Wow.
So that's been pretty, that was always kind of funny, but yeah, he will get mad about that.
And yeah, I bet eyes were locked in on him after someone starts running. Something I've always wondered about college players, and more so just like your routine during football season. So you don't have to go into like the nitty gritty of it, but could you walk me through like what your week looks like? So you play on Saturday. Like, what do y'all do on Sunday? That's my biggest thing. And then like, what do you do during the week? Like, what time do you practice during the midweek? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I'll run you through a quick week. So Saturday game, obviously. So depending on the games, when you have time at the hotel, whatever, it's game time. And then after that, you're done for the day or whatever. Before that, just meetings, you know, whatever. So Saturday game. And then we'll say Sunday. So Sunday, we always come in and watch the film, make corrections about what we did right and wrong. You know, we look at what we did right and wrong, make corrections, and then we'll get a lift in to sort of, it helps the soreness is to get active again and, you know, move around a little bit, break a little sweat. It helps you, you know, not be sore from a game. So that's always good. And then the next day, also the young guys will have practice too. So the guys that didn't play in the game, actually, honestly, last year, we did have some guys that played like playing on Saturday and then we got practice again on Sunday, but very light, like not a whole lot going on. It's like a 45 minute practice just to kind of move around again and sort of, you know, make again, like to walk through some of the corrections that we made so that it's while it's still fresh. So that's a typical Sunday. And then we get all three meals on Sunday, like, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner. So that's actually maybe not breakfast, but we, you know, get meals. Monday, completely off, no mandatory thing. So you can come in for optional breakfast and lunch, but don't have to. Guys normally get a lot of treatment and stuff and get ready for Tuesday practice. And Tuesday is like if it's a burger, Tuesday is like the meat. Like it's like the big, big day where you're installing everything for the week. And it's the most physical practice and stuff. So Tuesday is kind of the big day. So every day, pretty much Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is all practice days, but it gets lighter each day. So Wednesday's a little bit easier than Tuesday. Thursday's a little bit easier than Wednesday. So Tuesday's where we really get our work in. And every day is like we're in the building. This isn't exact, but like we're in the building from 7 to about 12. So that's like getting there early. That's meetings, getting taped for practice, actual practice, breakfast, grabbing lunch, like all that. So all that takes about 4 to 5 hours. And so that's every morning. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday travel to the game and then repeat.
Wow. Okay. Very cool. So you're in the building 7 a.m. You said Tuesday through Thursday and then Friday.
Yeah.
If you're away, I would imagine you maybe meet up a little earlier in the day. And then if you're home, you can meet up later.
Yeah. So Friday home game is in at 2:00 and then you have meetings and stuff on Friday, walk through all that, go to the hotel around 5 or 6:00. eat dinner at the hotel, then we do things at the hotel and then and all that. For an away game, we're probably in more like at 10 or 11 a.m. Like today, like they, yeah, they're probably doing, they're probably as we speak on this fine Friday afternoon, probably in walkthrough right now, like getting ready to be done and then grab a little snack and then probably head to the airport here in a little bit, if not on the way to the airport now. So they'll move a little bit quicker on to travel somewhere.
Got it. Very cool. Yeah. It's always interested me because you hear coaches all the time say like, they love noon games because we're always up and active early. Whereas as fans, we like the night games because we get to drink more basically. But I've always been so curious about that schedule. So thanks for that. And then you side note with flying to games, are y'all on one plane or is it two planes? Like, what does that look like?
So there is a plane that leaves a day early that would leave on Thursday night. That has no players, but just like it's all the equipment staff and like training staff. So they set up like the training rooms. They like, you know, set up all the fridges, like in our meeting rooms and stuff, like with drinks and stuff so we can stay hydrated. And then the equipment staff puts everybody's pads in their jerseys and sets up their cleats and gets everything ready for Friday. So they have it like done a day early, so they're not rushing to do anything. And so a lot of them, yeah, they'll go up the day early, so they have everything ready for when we get here on Friday. And then the Friday plane is, yeah, there's, so the plane is basically broken down, like the seniors and like a lot of the linemen are like kind of in the first class seats with more leg room in the front.
Nice.
And then after that, it's coaches like kind of in the pretty good seats. And then it's like the more players again after that. And then the back of the plane is a lot of like the boosters and donors that, you know, are like the double platinum diamond spur level that get to travel like to the game. And so they'll travel with us sometimes too, but it's players, coaches, boosters on that second flight usually.
Got it. Very cool. I absolutely love that linemen are in first class and the coaches are in business class. That makes me really happy. So got two last questions for you here. Most underrated place in the SEC you've played as far as like tough place to play. That's away, obviously something that's underrated, you feel.
So I mean, being in the SEC, they're all pretty rated, I guess, as you could say. Yeah, like everyone fair. Knows what it's like in the SEC, but I would say that no one really talks about Kentucky a lot. And that, I'm not just saying that because we play them tomorrow, but it really is like a pretty crazy environment. Cause you know, everyone knows Georgia's loud. Everyone knows Florida's loud. Everyone knows about Tennessee, but like no one really seems to like, you know, talk much about the Kentucky Wildcats, but they do have a pretty rowdy home environment. They play Grove Street by Waka Flocka, like every kickoff. Oh. They have smoke going off and the whole stadium's jumping up and down. And, you know, their fans are, you know, they're the actual, like where their seats are pretty close to our bench. So, you know, they're loud and they'll, you know, they let you hear it all game. They have a lot to say. So it's a pretty wild environment. And also from like a playing standpoint, their field's turf and not a lot of the SEC fields are turf. So, you know, guys get used to cutting on grass and stuff. So they definitely have a little bit of like a home field advantage for sure.
A literal field advantage, if you will. Wow. Definitely. That's interesting. I would not have made that connection with turf and grass because you always just think in college, it's a lot of grass. And then last question before I get you out of here, favorite game, favorite memory as a player at USC.
I would say that my number one favorite game was probably the Missouri game in 2018 when I had the game winner in that game and it was raining. We had like a big long delay. Like that was probably my favorite, but the Duke's Mayo Bowl was a close second.
Awesome.
That was just such a good way to go out or whatever. But yeah, those are probably my top two.
Two great picks. Yeah. That Mizzou game was absolutely wild. Like just if you can kind of picture it watching it on TV, it almost looked like it was staticky just because it was raining so hard. And I was just like, this is just unbelievable, but really appreciate you coming on, man. And then, one more time, plug it for the people. It's a United Spur Carriers, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right.
Yeah, so go support. We got an Instagram page. And so just if you're interested in a hat or if you're interested in potentially helping us in the trucking industry, if you have freight that needs to be moved for a big logistics firm or whatever it is, just feel free to shoot us a message. Our DMs are open at United Spur Carriers on the account. I do the social media and Ben has it too, but it'll probably be me on there. So just so y'all know or whatever, and feel free to order some hats and support us.
Awesome. Yeah. Please do go help Parker in any way you can, but man, I really appreciate you coming on. This was fun. You're welcome back anytime.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Tim. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, y'all. Well, that concludes the first official player interview for the Cox Talking Gamecocks podcast. I hope y'all liked it. You know, I tried my best. I tried to put my journalist hat on, but still have fun with it. If there's any questions you wish I had asked or things that you want to get the perspective of these athletes, feel free to shoot me a message. I don't think Parker's going to be the last interview I do. I don't want to interrupt the schedule of the show too much. I want to make sure the person I bring on next is the right fit, but I had a blast doing this. So I'm going to keep trying to get people on the show from all different sports. I think we should celebrate these student athletes as we do as fans and also get to know them as people. But I had a blast. I hope y'all enjoyed it as well. Feel free to let me know what y'all think. And please follow me on social media. Twitter is Cox Gamecocks. Instagram is just the name of the show, Cox Talking Gamecocks. And please like, subscribe, and review to the podcast. I appreciate all y'all. Go Cox.